Hey friends, this is the Helping Friendly Podcast. This is a quick-ish hit for the Philadelphia and Pittsburgh shows on the fall 2019 tour. You've got Matt here. With me on the phone is Jonathan. Hey man, how's it going?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm glad we could squeeze this in during the working day, because unfortunately I'm back at work and not on my way to Charleston.
Same. So it feels like the good old days, just sneaking this in between meetings or whatever. Yeah, I think this is cool because we have been so busy this fall with various projects and stuff that we haven't gotten to chat. So this feels like a good opportunity to catch up. And seeing as I was at Philadelphia and you were at Pittsburgh, we can get some input from each other on how those shows went down. So that's awesome. I want to start out and remind everybody, I shouldn't have to remind our audience. I think you guys are probably the last people that we need to tell about this, but consider it more of a shaming, if anything. If you're not already listening to After Midnight, our series on Big Cypress, why? What are you doing? What are you waiting for? Go listen to it. It's pretty amazing. I've been sort of trapped in the swamp for the past couple of months working on that, so it feels nice to talk about some modern fish and listen to some modern fish. But if you're not caught up, I'll tell you, if you were waiting for anything, now's the time to go, because next week, as of when we're recording this, we will be releasing episode 4, which focuses solely on the Midnight to Sunrise set. And I say, as the person putting this stuff together, having read all the scripts, kind of knowing what's coming, it's going to be the best episode, and you're going to want to listen to this right away. So go get caught up if you haven't, and please do us a favor, tell everybody you know about it. If they're fish fans and they are averse to podcasts, make them listen to it. If they're podcast fans and they're averse to fish, make them listen to it. It's a compelling story. I've had a lot of people in my life who are not fish fans listening to it and telling me, wow, this is a really cool thing. I'm going to keep listening to it because the story is awesome. There's a lot of detail to it. And if they're music fans, they're not fish fans, they're not podcast fans, get them on the music podcast train. Tell them that it's a cool thing and they should be checking it out. So there's my piece on that.
Let me tag on to that really quick, because I really didn't do anything on this production. I transferred a cassette or something. But so coming from the outside, I'm not reading any of the scripts. I don't have any foreknowledge. But I have been riveted listening to this, because I was at Big Cypress. And it's, you know, not only telling a story that I was a part of, but it's really revealing stuff that I didn't know. Things that I wasn't, you know, were not privy to. And I mean, hell, even the bit in the last episode about the shortages, if you will, I wasn't aware of that at all, because it's not something, I know, I was at Big Cypress with my future wife and a 3-year-old, and I didn't encounter that problem. so it was, it's been a fascinating listen. You guys are doing great work on it, and everybody out there should be listening. And if they're not, I can't even really fathom why.
Well, thank you for that. It's certainly a labor of love, and we're glad that everybody's loving it. Including, we've gotten some really great feedback from the band's management and whatnot. So, loving that. But let's talk about 2019. I'm in an interesting place here. I mentioned earlier I was at the Philadelphia show. You were at the Pittsburgh show. I've sort of been trapped in the swamp. I had a really crazy experience, was just that I came into the Philly show very uninformed about what's been going on in this tour. And I've not listened to much, if anything. I obviously saw that show, but I haven't re-listened to any of it. I heard a little bit from the second night of Charleston on the way up, the drive up to Philly, mostly because I wanted to know what the whole THX sound gag was about.
Providence.
I'm sorry. Yeah, Providence. Yep. See, that's exactly how confused I am about everything. And then I listened to the Haley's Comet Jam from Pittsburgh, because I was told that was something that I should check out. And I literally last night, after putting in a bunch of work, it was very late, I wanted to wind down, and I put the video of Tube that got uploaded to YouTube in wonderful 4K HDR video. Wanted to check that out and literally fell asleep asleep during it, so I didn't even hear the tube jam. So I genuinely, I'm coming from a place of genuine curiosity about what's been going on in some of these shows, and so maybe we can swap experiences here.
Well, I mean, I have been playing along from home all year long, actually. Pittsburgh was my first show of the year. It's been that kind of weird year for me, my life and schedule versus Fish's. But I really have enjoyed the first part of tour. They definitely are starting to, very quickly, I think, started to loosen up and open up, and they're hitting things well, like they compose things reasonably well, and they are exploring. They, you know, we don't have to run through all the highlights of the first few shows, but there are a number of them, and then we have this unique show, I think, that you went to. It was unique in a lot of ways, and including the fact that there is no officially downloadable content. Because it's owned by Sirius, and it was in this tiny venue, and it was interesting. I listened to it from home, but I want to hear about the experience. Tell us about getting into, because this is not a regular concert even. So tell us about getting into the Met. What was it like inside the room? And then we'll get at some musical highlights.
Yeah, really special show. I kind of came into it, you know, needing a kind of a break and a release of tension and seeing some Fish after, you know, kind of burying myself in all this stuff recently. The other show. So I was pumped about that, and I wasn't thinking about it until I drove up there. I was like, wow, like I'm driving to my hometown where I was born and raised and still have so many friends and family and just so much love for Philadelphia. And I do consider it to be one of the true great rock and roll cities of the world. And this, what I heard was a beautiful venue. I had never been to the Met before, so I was excited to be able to do that. And then on top of that, see Fish in this very, very small confines that, you know, smallest venue in, I guess, since Roseland 2000. And so I was, all of that, I wasn't even thinking about it until I was on my way to the show and just realizing what a special experience it was going to be. But at the same time, there was so much kind of like unknown, like, you know, what was the experience going to be like? Like I was somebody's plus one, so I was not even clued into like, what's the process? How do we get inside? Like, are we going to be assigned seats? Is it just going to be like you show up and they say, hey, go pick a seat out? Like what's going to happen? And I have to say, hats off to everybody involved in running this. My understanding is that Sirius was actually, you know, they essentially rented the venue and ran the whole thing. And from what I could see, it was a very, very smooth experience for everybody. I got into town around just before 5 o'clock and went over to the venue, met up with RJ, and we were, you know, went and picked up our tickets. And they were, as basically what they were doing is like you went early in the day or whenever you could get there with your entire party, you all had to be there, and they gave you a wristband to, you know, say that you're able to go in. And they, at that point, assigned you a ticket. And I guess based on like order that people were showing up and like whether you had won the contest or you were like, you know, gifted tickets by the band or somebody in the industry or something like that, they had kind of different assigned sections of the venue. So like we wound up with the GA pit up front. But then like the second level where there's just all these like really cool ornate boxes, my understanding is that was like the band's like friends and family. So like Tom Marshall and Trey's parents and like all those types of people were on that level. And then upstairs there's this huge mezzanine with a lot of seats and some more boxes and stuff like that. And that's where like a lot of people were sitting as well. The venue itself is way smaller than I expected. I mean, you know, capacity is about 3,500, but I expected the actual dimensions of the room to be a lot bigger. And when we walked into the orchestra, the floor, it was like even if you were leaning against the back wall of the orchestra, you still felt like you could reach out and touch the stage. And one thing that somebody pointed out we got there and we were about 10 people back from the rail. And we were talking to somebody and he was like, you know, we're standing about the distance that you'd be from the band if you saw them in an arena and you were on the rail, because the band, the stage was so small that the band was up against the front of the stage. There was a very very little photo pit or security area. Like the rail was right up against the stage and then you had people. So it was that level of intimacy that you know, no matter where you were, it just felt like you were kind of connected with the band. So very, very cool experience all around at the Met.
Outstanding. Yeah, that sounds like a great room. I know RJ, who I went to Pittsburgh with, told me that he moved around a good bit because that's what he does at shows often. And he said any point in the venue that he went to, he had an outstanding sight line and he didn't feel far away. So it sounds like a good room. So let's talk about the music. You got a lot of tweezer action, and what are your highlights of this show?
So that's the other thing is, like, you know, in terms of unknowns, like, this is a special radio show. Are they going to, is it just going to be a regular Old Fish show? Is it going to be, are they going to kind of phone it in because it's, you know, not one of their sort of regular shows and it's a special, you know, free show for people? There was even some people were walking around outside the venue swearing up and down that Fish was recording a new album that night and that we were going to hear all new material and stuff. So all sorts of wild conjecture being thrown around and stuff. But it was just a regular Old Fish show, but it was a very good Fish show, I thought. I'm a sucker for a tweezer. When we got into the third tweezer, I was standing with RJ and some other folks that we know and the whole team from Jam Bass that was there. We were all kind of around and I was standing next to Scotty Bernstein and I was sort of like held up my hand. I was like, all right, we have a Tweezer Fest, folks. It's officially a Tweezer Fest. To get that in the first set, I thought was pretty cool. It kind of showed you that they were like not phoning it in from the start. And it was high energy, from the beginning. To back it up for a second, I thought the acapella opener was awesome. Very cool nod to being in the small room and a huge,
great choice for
enormous
that, right?
Bust out in Hello My Baby too. The only thing I would say in terms of, you know, Monday morning quarterbacking or whatever, it would have been cool, and I don't know if this would have worked at all, if they had saved that to the end and maybe tried to do it without mics, because it would have worked in that room. Since it's an opera house, the acoustics were actually really good for vocals.
Song without mics doesn't make for very good radio.
Well, and that's part of it. That's a good point. And the other sort of cynical part of me says that in 2019, they can't pull that out because there's always going to be some jerk who decides to scream, "I love Fish," when it gets really quiet, and then somebody else is going to shush them, and somebody's going to shush the shusher, and it's not going to work. But
well, that's how it went back when they did do that too. So it's not like it's a new development.
Sure,
I think that the flip side to that also is that the mic rig that they're using for that these days is just, it's outstanding. It gives really nice sound in the recordings after the fact. So I think that it works quite well and you can really get their harmonies. I was in my car racing home from a long day, having picked up a kid who, my eldest, who, or my middle child, eldest at home, who had a harp lesson that until 8 o'clock. So we're driving across town, listening to it in the car, and they go into Hello My Baby. I ecstatically exclaimed something or other, and I got the 16-year-old looking at me like I'm crazy as I crank Hello My Baby in the car. It sounded great. It sounded really great to me.
Yeah.
It sounded really well.
It was good, and it got things going in a nice way, and then to have that and then, you know, get right into Tweezer after that was really cool. So I think as far as, you know, first set, obviously lots of tweezers. The segues back into Tweezer and everything else felt really good. I think that was my number one takeaway from the night, is that all of the segues that they did were really good. Nothing felt forced. Nothing felt ripcorded at all. You look at, you know, going from the MoMA dance back into Tweezer. There was a key change there that they had to execute, and it was done really well. But then going into Blaze On was perfect, to the point where sometimes in those types of transitions, I feel like Trey kind of feels the rhythm and the rest of the band does, and he starts playing a lick and it falls apart because Fishman has to kind of stop for a second, think of the new groove and start playing it. And he very seamlessly drops from the Tweezer groove into the Blaze On groove. And that, I think that made that transition. And then same thing, you know, going from Kill Devil Falls into Tweezer into Umar, just really smooth, not forced, felt very natural. Was a great, first set. Didn't know if they'd get back to Tweezer in the second set, but they did just a little bit. So
yeah, I want everybody to remember what you said about that transition to Blaze On, and how it wasn't how it could have been, and sometimes they don't go sometimes they don't go so well. I want everybody to remember what you said there, because I think you described something from Pittsburgh perfectly without trying. Sorry. So second set highlights, I mean, a little more Tweezer, nice Chalk Dust that jammed, and kind of a thumping mic song, although no second jam in that.
No, but once again, I mean, great Chalk Dust Torture jam, probably the most out there jam of the night in terms of Type 2 stuff. But once again, smooth segue back into Tweezer for the final time of the evening. And then once again, amazing. I don't know why this doesn't have, I'm looking at the fish.net set list right here. I don't know why that doesn't have a true segue arrow there, because that segue from Tweezer into Mike's song, it brought back memories of, was that the Disease into Mike's song from Raleigh 97? In the middle of a jam, just very smoothly going into that Mike song lick, which was just great. Sparkle, ass-handed Weekapaw groove. The ass-handed Weekapaw groove was super, super, super fun. I liked that. And then it's one of those shows where, like, you felt in the moment like they could have just kind of put a capper on the second set at that point. It would have been pretty fun. But instead we got this entire second half, starting off with a really beautiful version of Miss You, Waves, which is Waves and Twist. Anytime I hear either of those, it always puts me in a very psychedelic headspace, and you got both of those together. So I think while the first part of the set was more kind of rocking, exploratory, the second half was very, very spacey, psychedelic, between the Waves, the Twist, and then in 2001, I mean,
whoa.
Oh my God, out of nowhere, because it was actually a little rough around the edges at the start, and looking at watches and stuff, it was kind of like, all right, they're probably just going to play this real fast and then, play, Cavern or something like that, or Zero, just cap off the set. And instead we got Outer Space. I mean, it was unbelievable. And I hope it came through on the radio broadcast, how truly out there they got, because it was a really special thing.
Oh, it really did. I mean, they were melting faces all over the planet, thanks to the power of space radio. And they really put the space into space radio with that song. Man, it was outstanding. Well, I was loving it and talking about it all day the next day.
Yeah, it was one of those things, not just noise, but almost breaking free from rhythm and from melody into just sound, elements of kind of plinko and rhythm, rhythmic playing, but without a specific time signature. The lights, it was kind of funny. And I don't know, I'm hoping they release like some YouTube video or something like that. And you can probably see from pictures and videos that fans have posted, it was almost comical. Like, they took a section of the lighting rig and they hung it in the venue, and it didn't move at all or anything, because the stage was way too small to support that. But the band was like dwarfed by the lights that they tried to squeeze in there. And one of the things that you realize when you put them in the small space is that the actual lighting fixtures themselves are so enormous, but they have to be because of the distance that they are from the band and how far they have to project in an arena or an amphitheater. And it doesn't look weird, but in this tiny room, it was like you've got all of these lights that are like bigger than a human head surrounding the band, and just like, really blinding people at times. And so 2001 was a really good test of that, to kind of get funky in people's eyeballs. And then you cap the whole thing off with Waste was really nice, and Tweet Prize, you know, somewhat expected. But as I've said before, and I'll say again, when you have a great show, you don't really need to do anything special during the encore. And Tweezer Reprise is always special itself. The one thing I will call out on that one, and I think this is the second Tweet Prize in a row where I saw this happen. I'm thinking maybe this happened at Dick's too. Mike went to play his big deep note at the beginning during the intro, and nothing came out of his rig. And he started, like, you know, hitting pedals, turning knobs, looking around, tried it again, nothing happened. And he finally, I don't know if he like tries to do like a more like textured version of this now with a lot of effects and it doesn't working. And he just reverted to just like, I'm just going to pop the hell out of this string when the band comes in. And so when Fishman came in, he just hit it really hard, and finally the whole venue shook with his big note, getting a little frustration out of there. But and then it was really crazy because you looked up at like the balcony and everything, and it was just like you kind of realized the collective energy of the room and the people. It was a really fun Tweet Prize. So awesome, sweet. Awesome night. I mean, I wasn't planning on seeing any shows on this fall tour, and this was a nice treat for me. So I think it was great. I think that the band really showed up on a big night, which is always great to see them do. And they really, it did feel like a special show, and I'm glad I got to attend.
Yeah, well, I am glad you got to attend as well. Sounds like a really good time. I hope they free the tapes someday. And we can all hear it in full non-satellite compressed fidelity in the future.
Yeah, it's, you know, I think maybe my only critique of the entire thing is that they really should have allowed audience tapers. I think that's the one thing that they did here that kind of violates the typical understanding between Fish and the audience. And I'm saying that mostly because the unfortunate nature of the serious thing is that the sound quality of satellite radio is pretty awful. And my understanding from talking to people who were just listening, and maybe you can confirm this, is that the sound quality of the broadcast was pretty terrible and a little frustrating at time. And I feel like even if they didn't want to put it out as a live Fish download because they want to own the recording or something like that, if they had allowed audience tapes that night, it would have been a really nice kind of trade-off for that. So did you have any thoughts on kind of, you know, the sound quality? Did it bother you?
I wish there were audience tapes. It did bother me. You know, the delay aside, and the delay is not a big deal, but it was, you know, just a weird annoyance for Couch Tour. But putting that aside, yeah, it was the compression. I don't know. Some people reported that the mix was not familiar. And I think that's, you know, I don't know if it was different or not, or what logistics were different insofar as the mixing of the feed. But it didn't sound the way we're used to. I think, believe it or not, despite a lot of people's complaining over the years, we're quite spoiled by live Fish. We're very lucky to have that do what it does, even though many of us might ask for more, like audio-only streams or what have you. This didn't hold up quite to that standard. But the playing was really good. The event is very cool, and we'll treasure whatever tapes we have as we go forward.
I will say, I know Mike made a comment about this on Twitter. The sound was amazing in the room. It was fantastic. Gary Brown's typical incredible PA mix, but the bass sound was unbelievable. It's just, the room is really, really tall, and you know, it's an old opera house, and they were designed for people to be able to project their voice very well. But it felt like it was like the perfect height for a standing bass wave, because Mike's bass was so unbelievably crystal clear all night. The one other thing I'll say before we move on to talking about Pittsburgh, just in terms of the experience, it was amazing hearing more sound off of the stage than in the PA from where we were standing. I mean, I was definitely listening to Trey's guitar rig and not Trey's guitar rig put through the PA system. So hearing that, you know, removing that layer of abstraction in the sound really, really helped. So I think that's another reason why, if they had audience recording, it would be pretty great. But we had it. It was a great experience. And then after the show, the band was on the bus and immediately out across the state of Pennsylvania to Pittsburgh. So let's shift to you, Jonathan. You mentioned this was your... Is this your one show for the year? No New Year's run or anything like that?
No, I didn't say that, but it's my first show of the year.
Okay.
So, yeah, I will be making appearances in the New York City in late December, which I'm very excited about. And that's kind of developing. So I just acquired the first of my necessary tickets. Actually, right after the Pittsburgh show, I got a message from a good friend, Todd, and who's been on the show. And he had a ticket for me for the 29th, so very excited about that. But let's talk about Pittsburgh. It was cold in Pittsburgh. We drove through snow and whatever and met up with a bunch of friends, and there's no real lot to speak of. So the bars in Pittsburgh near the venue were packed before the show, and so we went to a hot dog place, met up with a couple people, and I'm not kidding about the hot dog place. And then went into a great show. I had seats right behind the stage, which is one of my favorite places to sit. And I think they played a really good show. Everything we've seen, the highlights of the previous shows are coming together nicely. They opened with 555. If you don't dig that song, I don't know why you haven't gotten on board, because it's a sweet groove, in my opinion. And then Bag came after that. It was a little slowish AC/DC Bag, but pretty good. And then the first real highlight for me, it was Cars, Trucks, Buses, which was, I thought, a pretty hot version. And I hadn't seen that. Actually, I hadn't seen that since they returned in Hampton in 2009. So I was excited for that. Nice Water in the Sky sample. Things were standard great. Average great, as Charlie Dirksen used to say, probably still does. Funky Bitch, Wolfman's had a cool little jam. It's about 6.5 minutes into the Wolfman's. There's this jam that is akin to A Mind Left Body. You know, they're kind of Trey's kind of leading with that progression. There's more of a beat behind it than you might usually hear in A Mind Left Body jam. But it was brief, but very cool. Haley's did, as you mentioned at the top of this thing, Haley's had a little bit of a little extra. They basically went to stop the song where they always do. And Trace gave the little sign over to Mike, and they just tore back into it for a little bit, which was outstanding. A lot of fun.
Yeah, I mentioned that was the one thing I have listened to from this show, and I dug it. The one thing I didn't mention in talking about the Met, because I didn't experience it that much, but from the tapes that I've heard, this stuck out. And when I listened to this Haley's, this is kind of what I heard. It felt like, and I don't know if you have the same opinion, but like some of the composed sections are a little rough around the edges, like band not together. There was this Haley's Comet. It felt like they were kind of struggling to get through it. But then like they go into jam mode and it's just like, oh, here we go. Here's like top tier fish. I mean, did you have the same impression?
Well, I couldn't weigh in on that bit from Haley's, because I'm not going to lie. I ran to the bathroom at the beginning of Haley's, and I made it back for the jam. So I didn't have that impression through most of the night. I was very close, but behind the band, so I couldn't see their faces. But I definitely saw a lot of communication, and it sounded pretty tight to me. You know, kind of the usual for this point in 3.0, where Trey might slough off a line here and there in a composed theme with the purpose of, you know, getting to the next bit and making sure that the more important bits are covered and played. But I didn't really pick that up. I thought they were playing quite strong. A good example is Victim, which is a new Mike song, new for Fish. Mike Gordon's song, which is, you know, it's kind of a cool song. It's in 7/4 time. I was at the show. My friend Scott, the drummer for the Jaunty, he was with me, and he said very quickly, "Dude, this thing is in 7. That's crazy." And I was listening. Yeah, it's in a very fast 7/4 time, and I thought they hang in there really well. And I also got to say, I kind of like that song. And then we had an antelope to close the first set that just was big. It was, you know, high intensity antelope left everybody tired and excited, as an antelope ought to. So yeah, I have to go back and do some more re-listening to see if I'm hearing what you're talking about. I have seen a couple people mention it. I definitely saw people mention it with respect to the Met. I don't know if it was just the differing mix that we were hearing at home made it seem like that, but I didn't really feel the same way.
Yeah, once again, I mean, I didn't necessarily see that or feel that at the Met, but it's difficult when you're in the moment having fun and you're not necessarily listening to every single nuance of the song. That mostly came from the listening that I did to the Second Night of Providence. So seems like as the tour went on, they may have shooken off some of the cobwebs, which tends to happen as well.
I feel like they have knocked a good bit of them aside. So when they came out for Cavern, things were strong and good, and Runaway Gym, we got excited when they dropped in Runaway Gym, and we were right to, because that has a really good out there type 2 jam that led us into the first Ghosts of the Forest.
How is this? I will say I lied. This is the other thing that I have heard from this show, and listening to it on the recording, it sounds super tight. And when I look at this show on paper, or this set on paper, first off, it looks like an incredible set on paper, but coming out of what you and others have told me was a sort of deep space, Runaway Gym, it sounds like perfect placement for the first time to play.
Oh God, it was outstanding placement. And they played it very well. The only thing I would say about Ghost of the Forest, the only thing I would change is that he plays that lick at the end of the song, that riff there, that I just would love to hear him vamp on that a little bit longer at that point. Just a few more bars of it, just because it's so good, that riff he's doing there at the end. It's so good. His tone so powerful that I wanted to live in that moment a bit longer. But that's a hell of a complaint, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of an entitled look. And then they played a song, I Heard the Ocean Sing, which, you know, I've been seeing this band a while, and I've somehow never caught a song I Heard the Ocean Sing. They always play it at the show before or after.
Oh, wow.
I'm attending. Yeah.
That's great.
So that was weird. And great to finally see. Then they, you know, they took that into Caspian, and this is where I'll bring up the pin that I dropped into your description of transitions. This is one where Trey was ready to start Caspian, but the band wasn't quite playing it. So he started singing it, and then they started playing it right, and then, you know, then it went on, and I enjoyed the Caspian. And then good, pretty standard Fuego, followed by You Enjoy Myself, which I got to say we did not really see coming. And I thought that was a good You Enjoy Myself. Good Trey dance in that, but also good solos from everybody. And I thought, sure, at the end of the vocal jam, they were going to stop. And Trey picks up his guitar. And we got Good Times, Bad Times, which is a great rocking kind of bonus closer. So they leave the stage, or as they're about to leave the stage, they're doing their little bows. Some folks in the front, near the front row, you know, in the front of the very small, we haven't even talked about this room. It's a great little room, by the way. It's not very big.
Yeah, I wanted to hear about
small floor.
I wanted to hear about that because it's a newer place and they've only played there once before. And seems like it's one of those things where they're going back to their roots a little bit and playing like a college arena, right?
Right. Like this is a college. I mean, it's, you know, not a small college per se, but it's not a very big arena. The floor is kind of tiny once you have their big ass stage on it. And then the risers coming down to the floor in the back and on one side. It was, I wasn't on the floor, but I had a pretty good view of it. It did not go that deep. There was just, you know, not a lot of people. Now the sides and things kind of went up a good bit, but there was also a fair amount of elbow room. I think it was undersold, or if it was sold out, there was no lack of tickets available. So there was a little bit of elbow room throughout the place.
Nice.
But maybe because of the out of the way sort of nature of the show in the run itself. But yeah, so I thought it was a great little room. It sounded good, even behind the stage. I think I haven't downloaded any audience tapes yet, but I'm about to jump on that tonight. But yeah, after set two, a large banner rose out of the audience while they were doing their bows, and it said, "I really love you, and I mean you." And we spotted it. We had seen it once before, but we couldn't read the whole thing the first time it had come up. So it came up then, and we read it, and we had a good laugh. And I was like, "Yeah, I don't really see that happening." And sure enough, they came out, did "Hold Your Head Up," Terrapin, the first of 3.0, first one I've seen since Virginia Beach '99. And it was great. Good vacuum, good fun. Fishman jumping and running, jumps up on the piano right in front of me. How I kind of wish I had my phone out, because I would have had a beautiful picture of him up on the piano, but I was not taking pictures at the time.
Well, at least he kept his dress on if he was that close to you.
Well, in some of those bows, it doesn't, kind of rides a little. I didn't see anything I didn't want to see.
First Terrapin in 15 years, not only the first of 3.0, but first since the end of 2.0, Tweeter Center 8/11 2004, which was the only Terrapin of 2.0. And before that had been the year 2000 they played it. So only the second, I guess the third time this millennium that the song has been played. That's pretty crazy. Really, really nice bust out.
Yeah, and so thank you to whoever had that banner, because I don't see how we could not give them credit for it.
Yeah.
We had ourselves a good little show there. Julius sent us home, and Julius is I misspoke. I turned to Scott and I said, "Man, this song is never not bad," but that's not what I mean. It's never not good. Every Julius is the best Julius. It's a great, just pumping rock song. They'd have to really botch it to send you home too disappointed after that. And they didn't. And it was a lot of fun. Then we walked out into the cold, windy night, where there were no ride shares to be found, and walked a good bit back to the hotel. And sadly back into our lives as opposed to onto Charleston.
Yeah, we also wish I was going to Charleston, but, life, logistics, podcasts, whatnot, it all comes together. But like I said, I was not planning on seeing any shows on this tour, so the Met was a really, really nice treat for me and a surprise. But I think, like you, I'm looking ahead to MSG at this point. Although excited to hear what's going to happen in Charleston this weekend. I have a lot of friends going down there, as I'm sure you do. I think on the initial look at the tour, it was the sort of relatively easy strike for a lot of folks in the DC and Virginia area where we are. So
Absolutely. Plus folks from everywhere, because it's 3 nights.
Yep.
It's a 3-night run at a GA venue. How could you go wrong? It's the end of tour.
Yeah.
They're warmed up. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's not going to be as cold as up north. So I think everybody has every reason to be excited for this weekend, and I will be couch touring some of it and really looking forward to listening to every bit of it.
Nice. And I will.
I think the band is in a good place. So
yeah.
I think we're all pretty lucky right now.
Yeah, they've hit a sweet spot. And I think it's cool that there's only a couple weeks off then before they head into MSG. Bodes well for that run where, of course, they always manage to step up. I will say for the folks going to Charleston, if you did not know this, the Charleston Coliseum is where the mega church scenes from the show The Righteous Gemstones were filmed. So I am fully predicting a sit-in from Uncle Baby Bill on Misbehavin' this weekend. You heard it here first.
Yeah, mark it down, y'all.
There you go. All right.
All right.
Well, Jonathan, let's get back to work. Since we don't have anything from the Mets to drop into the episode here, what do you think from Pittsburgh we should leave folks with?
I think you should give them some of the Runaway Jim.
Okay.
Let them hear, or I don't know, or the Wolfman's Brother has pretty good jam and it's compact. So a micro jam, if you will. So either one of those, I'm going to let you flip the coin and surprise everybody.
I want to hear this Runaway Jim because people keep telling me about it. So let's take you to the deep space of Runaway Jim. We will be back early next week with a recap of Charleston. Thanks for bearing with us. We're not doing day by day here while all of us sort out a lot of things going on this fall. It's a very busy fall for all of us. We did want to make sure that you get to hear a little bit about each grouping of shows. So we, if everything goes well, we'll be back on Monday with a recap of Charleston. And here you go to the deep space of Runaway Jim. Thanks.